So last week, while everybody was distracted with the small issue of the American election, something else pretty significant happened, which is that the government of the despised German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, collapsed. Now, I like to think that I don't speak beyond my areas of knowledge too often, and if I ever do, you can be sure I'll research that topic inside and out. But where possible, I have always got in people who know an area better than I do. And I've got a couple of friends in Germany, and one of them is Monothalmus, who has very kindly put together this very informative video today explaining how and why the German government collapsed. So take it away, Monothalmus. Maybe give him a follow on Twitter too. I've put his handle in the show notes.
A few days ago, Germany made international headlines when its governing coalition fell apart over a budget dispute. People usually don't pay much attention to German internal politics, owing to, among other things, the language barrier and a political system that is both complicated and boring. Okay, governments come and go, you might say, but this is a special occasion. We've had snap elections before, but a coalition falling apart hasn't happened since 1982. So a closer look at what led to the situation might be in order. This is not merely some cabinet squabble due to hurt egos, although this too is a factor. An entire chapter of recent political history, a style of politics, is coming to an end, in my view at least. Therefore, I'd like to take a quick look in the rearview mirror to explore how we got here. Eugippius has done an excellent job at laying out the current affairs aspect of it, and I highly recommend you check out his Substack piece on this. The current era of German politics started in 1998, when after 16 years, Helmut Kohl was voted out of office as he tried to win a fifth term. The 90s had been somewhat uneventful in Germany. The aftermath of reunification was complicated. The euro had been agreed on, a concession to the French as the prize for reunification, and due to lacking economic reforms, Germany was considered to be the sick man of Europe. In came Gerhard Schröder, an energetic young social democrat in the mold of Bill Clinton and, drumroll, Tony Blair, with whom he presented a shared policy white paper written by Peter Mandelson and Schröder's advisor Bodo Hombach ahead of the European elections of 1999. Schröder had a certain populist energy and machismo, rubbing many in his own party the wrong way with his public image wearing designer suits, smoking cigars, and being openly disinterested in issues like women's rights, gay marriage, and so on. Like many in his party, Schröder was not as committed to NATO as most Western politicians. In the 1950s, the Social Democrats had even campaigned to not even join NATO, as if Germany really had a choice, and they faced a revolt from their party base in the wake of the NATO double-track decision in 1979, with the young Olaf Scholz being among the protesters. In turn, Schröder did not join the war in Iraq and always had a close relationship with Vladimir Putin, with whom he planned the construction of the Nord Stream pipelines. The turning point for his time in office came in 2003, when he rammed a series of neoliberal economic reforms through parliament, known as the Agenda 2010. The reforms were partially written by NGOs, such as the Bertelsmann Foundation, look them up, and split the Social Democrats deeply. Many left the party, and the Agenda 2010 was treated as some sort of original sin, a betrayal of the working class, and so on, leading to a series of defeats for the Social Democrats in statewide elections. In 2005, Schröder decided to go on offense and called a snap election, which he narrowly lost to the CDU under Angela Merkel, who underperformed relative to the polls by almost 7 points. Schröder had a legendary meltdown on live TV, and Merkel became chancellor, leading a coalition of the two major parties, CDU and Social Democrats. Schröder later went on to work for Russian energy companies, Gazprom and Rosneft, and Merkel had by accident found her political formula. In 2005, Merkel had run with a program that combined neocon foreign politics with a hardline free market approach, wanting to replace the progressive income tax with a flat tax, for example. It wasn't her dull personality and lack of charisma that led to this near defeat, it was the unpopular program, she concluded. Schröder's trifecta of neoliberal reforms, cheap energy, and cordial relations with Russia was fundamentally sound. The problem was just the unpopularity of the reforms, and not enough gives. But since the Agenda 2010 had already been passed, all she had to do was dole out money while the economy ran relatively smooth. Tax revenue was flowing, she had money to spend, and spend it she did. Merkel had found the strategy that she would stick to until leaving office in 2021. For 12 of those 16 years, she governed in a coalition with the Social Democrats, who sought to atone for the Agenda 2010. The result was an insane spending spree, accompanied by a tax rate that was slowly creeping up. Every kind of welfare spending was increased, and several lavish pension reforms were implemented. The only limit to the spending spree was a constitutional amendment that was passed in 2009, an amendment commonly referred to as a debt break, that restricted the annual deficit that a government budget could legally have to 0.35% of GDP outside of national emergencies like the coup. But that was not yet an issue. Trade with China was going well and Russian gas was cheap. Black zero became the new magic word. It meant that the government would spend plenty but not create any new debt. And this was considered a major policy success for Merkel. In reality, this meant that every last penny was given to welfare spending, pension reforms, gifts and goodies for everyone, while foregoing other expenditures. The German army was starved of funding to the point that conscription was permanently suspended in 2010, and maintenance of the infrastructure, such as bridges and tunnels, was kept to an absolute minimum. For the first decade of her reign, Merkel pulled off the impressive stunt of being a highly popular chancellor at the head of a deeply unpopular government, to the point where her public image was largely disassociated from any government policies, aided by a journalist class that adored her. She successfully drained the politics out of government. Nothing was up for debate. There is no alternative, reigned supreme, which is where the AfD got its name from. Merkel took Schröder's trifecta and added a fourth element, the Gibbs. She patched and updated the system. This started to change, of course, when Merkel found a new way of spending money in 2015, by letting in hordes of immigrants. Opening the borders had been her decision and her decision alone, same as the decision to phase out nuclear energy in 2011, and the decision to not kick Greece out of the Eurozone. In all three cases, her party was against her decision. In all three cases, the center-right party cucked. Imagine that. The last 6 years of Merkel's reign from 2015 onwards were marked by a slow decline of living standards, owing to the increased diversity, corresponding phenomena like rising costs of housing, and, among other things, high energy prices for consumers. German industry, meanwhile, especially energy-intensive branches like car manufacturing, could still rely on cheap Russian gas, while everyone else was expected to pay up and shut up. Merkel's decision to ban coal burning, phasing out coal, from 2018 onwards only accelerated this. After a series of defeats in statewide elections, Merkel announced that she would not stand for re-election in 2021, leading to a three-way race. The CDU nominated Armin Laschet, a lackey of Merkel, after hand-picked delegates voted for him over Merkel's old rival, Friedrich Merz, who led an uprising of the party base. The Green Party had a great surge in popularity during Merkel's final term and nominated Annalena Baerbock, a bumbling fool who couldn't even talk straight into a microphone. While these two self-combusted, Olaf Scholz, Merkel's former Minister of Finance, successfully conned barely enough voters into mistaking him for a serious and stern statesman, mostly by just standing there and saying as little as possible. As soon as Scholz actually had to govern, the ruse fell through. He formed the Traffic Light Coalition with the Green Party and the pro-business FDP. This coalition, whose collapse we just witnessed a few days ago, set out to modernize Germany. But their idea of modernization boiled down to accelerating Merkel's formula, legalizing weed, and ramping up the green stuff. Especially after the coup and the ensuing recession, the Scholz government ought to have eaten their vegetables and cut on the spending spree that had been the Merkel years. But has anyone ever seen a government undo a pension reform? Weed has now been legalized, and the green stuff has not only been proven to negatively affect the population at large, it has also proven to be deeply unpopular. Go figure. So what is left for them to do? They don't really have any ideas that go beyond throwing money at problems, and that money simply isn't there at the moment. Germany wasn't even properly out of the post-lockdown recession when Nord Stream was blown up. Couple that with insane environmentalism, and German industry is in dire straits. Tax revenue is way down. The influx of Ukrainian refugees has contributed to the ever-rising welfare spending, and the welfare reform by the Traffic Light Coalition did not succeed in streamlining welfare and making it cheaper. On the contrary. Germany also massively contributed to the aid for Ukraine, second only to the US, especially if you consider that Germany is the largest individual contributor to the funding for the payments that the EU institutions themselves sent to Ukraine. Talk about turning the other cheek. Here lies the heart of the conflict. The Scholz government simply ran out of money. That's it. They ran out of money, and there's a constitutional amendment against just borrowing more money. Under normal circumstances, a coalition in disarray would have stuck together until the next election. That was due for September 2025, especially with opinion polls being as bad as they are. But next year's budget has to be decided upon, and as of now, Germany doesn't have one. In theory, Germany can't even give the promised aid to Ukraine after the end of this fiscal year. The conflict over the 2025 budget has been going on for weeks, and it has been a discombobulated mess, with cabinet ministers holding competing summits without even telling their colleagues or sometimes even the chancellor. The parties involved also wanted to avoid getting the blame for the failure of the coalition, so nobody was really willing to be the first one to head for the exit. Maybe they were waiting for the US presidential election to be over, maybe some were even hoping that Kamala could pull out a victory. In any case, Chancellor Scholz has now dismissed his Minister of Finance, leading to the exit of the Lolbert pro-business, heavy echoes by the way, FDP. In a way, it might be more surprising that it took them this long to end the coalition. Calls for snap elections were almost a constant companion of this ill-fated government, at least since the Green Party and the FDP, both in theory pro-civil liberties, were hardliners during the coup in 21 and 22. Scholz tried to accelerate Merkel's system of governance, blind or indifferent to its inherent flaws, but now the can-kicking has run out of road. Scholz and the Greens' traditionally soft stance on Russia has been absolutely broken by the war in Ukraine, a foreign policy they have held for decades in shambles. Another problem for them is that they've been highly successful at implementing their agenda in the last 20 years. The only thing that they could campaign against is their own record, or the nebulous threat of the far right. So what might the future bring? Olaf Scholz will ask the parliament for a vote of confidence on January 15th, which he's virtually guaranteed to lose. Doing so is one of the required formalities for calling a snap election in Germany. Now, what could be the result of this snap election that'll most likely be held in March? The situation is highly unpredictable and highly predictable at the same time. Unless something dramatic happens, the CDU, now headed by Merkel's old rival Friedrich Merz, will receive the most votes, probably ending up somewhere in the low 30s. The AfD will fight with the Social Democrats and the Greens for a distant second place, but that won't even matter all that much, since they're a pariah and nobody will work with them anyway. All other parties are either struggling to pass the 5% threshold or unlikely to be part of any government coalition, or both. So unless the Greens have a massive surge in popularity that elevates them 10 to 15 points nationally, unlikely given their dismal performance in government, the new coalition will be headed by Friedrich Merz, who will have to ally with the party to his left. There's an off chance that the CDU will try their luck with a minority government, but I wouldn't hold my breath. Who is Friedrich Merz? He's a strongly pro-free market guy, strongly pro-NATO, and used to work for BlackRock. He spent the Merkel years in the wilderness, so to speak, showing up at small party events every now and then as a sort of once-and-future king. He's always been talented, and ironically, he probably has fairly based instincts on most social issues. But if you think he'll ever shift society to the right beyond a bit of civic nationalism and counter-jihad, you're in for a rude awakening. If there is any issue on which Merz might rock the boat, it is his stance towards the EU, as he is definitely an Atlanticist. At least libtards are absolutely seething about everything he says or does, no matter how much 2012 GOP he is. With this election, I believe, a chapter of German political history that started in 1998 is coming to an end. The EU can't really let the German economy go down the shitter, and NATO can't be too happy with the amount of pro-Russian sentiment in Germany. Merkel's formula doesn't work anymore. It never really worked, but the means to maintain it are dwindling. At some point, basic stuff needs to work, and the government has been burning political capital for half a decade now. Germany isn't known for dissident energy, but there is a sort of passive resistance. People are checking out, regime phrases are ringing hollow, and most Germans, even those who support leftist parties, are fundamentally not liberal at heart. With faith in the institutions plummeting, the German political class is facing a dilemma. The first option would be to massively cut spending for years, which would be really unpopular and would prove to be difficult. The second option would be to declare a state of emergency over Ukraine, refugees, climate, or whatever. But not only would that just solve issues for the short term, it also would probably be struck down in court, because over here, the autism holds the politicization in check a little bit. The third option would be to implement tough economic reforms, but that would likely be political suicide for all political parties involved. The fourth option would be to change the constitution with a two-thirds majority to eliminate the debt brake, which would be almost impossible to pull off, and it also would not solve any of the underlying problems, it would just delay everything. It's not that Germany is broke, it's just that for legal reasons it can't go further into debt right now, as if the American debt ceiling was implemented in the constitution or so. I mean, theoretically speaking, we could go way further into debt for a number of years, but that of course is right now not possible. Tough decisions have to be made. One of the most likely consequences of Merz becoming chancellor would be Germany drifting closer to the US and an end to being soft on Russia and China. If he allies with the Social Democrats, he might have more wiggle room to dial back green stuff, be slightly more aggressive against the woke, and tougher on immigration, but economic reforms might be more difficult. If Merz allies with the Greens, he has a better chance to pull off economic reforms, but cultural issues will likely be swept under the rug, and immigration will be a point of contention between him and the Greens. In closing, Germany isn't heading towards "it's happening," but pressure and temperature are increasing. For something to really change here, there would need to be some external impulse, and we probably would have to see a few other dominoes fall first on the continent. But if history has taught us anything, it's that we Germans might take some time to get going, but once we're on the move, we don't do things by halves. As ever, the readiness is all. Thanks to Academic Agent for having me, and thanks everyone for listening.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.